the most important thing that matters. Did this show kick ass?
Incredibly. I can't even say enough of that. And I pulled the set list up here. Really, the whole thing did, but the first three songs out of the gate, Street Fightin' Man, You Got Me Rockin', 19th Nervous Breakdown.
Wow.
This is really where Steve Jordan especially came out, like I said, came out swinging. These three moved. I mean, they moved from one to the other, and there was not much downtime between them. And it was just like a series of body blows. If you're going to come out and come out punching, I mean, there's a couple ways to do it. His drumming is very different, and it's harder. I don't know how to say it. You know, Charlie's could be hard, but it was always smooth.
Mm.
And I will say that, to me, Charlie's drumming is different in every song. It's weird, because it's the same, but it's different, too.
I believe it.
I couldn't tell. And again, you know, some of this is the deafening roar in my... It's really hard to tell over a certain thing. On the fast numbers, it definitely brought this kind of very different energy. The only other time in recent times I remember this is Mick hosted Saturday Night Live a few years back, and he did his musical numbers with various people. Mm-hmm. I think Arcade Fire was one, the Foo Fighters was one, and Jeff Beck. In those instances, they had these different drummers who had the harder style. And it really rocked in a very different way. It was really good. Some versions of things that I hadn't seen in a long time. And it was similar to that. If you were, I didn't really ask, you know, my wife, but there's a lot of people who went who were younger who probably, this is the first time they've ever seen them live.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And to them, I don't know that they would, I don't want to say they didn't notice a difference, but there's a different perspective that they're getting on this completely.
Would you say that they're altering the formula slightly from 50% rock to 50% roll? Are we at like 60% rock now? 40% roll?
Yeah, I think it is a very different thing. And the thing I would say is on the slower numbers, and maybe this is by choice, but I don't know that, and again, it's early yet too, but the drumming in the slower numbers wasn't as, it didn't catch me as much as the fast ones did. It was fine, but it wasn't, whereas like Charlie's drumming on the slower numbers, because he was the role, it always registers. It's, you know, I'm going to have to go back and listen to these on when they're officially released.
Wink.
Yes.
Get on it.
I mean, we're saying that.
That's
I mean, the
next
were,
show we
there
want.
Were 50,000 people recording with cell phones. I mean, you know, let's call it what it is. But I want to hear it in a different context too. And I also want to see if they do more shows, what that sounds like, if he finds this different groove with them and.
Mm-hmm.
He fit into the slot really well, though. It really went.
So, okay, just that alone is kind of a triumph, because I was wondering if we were going to be having a discussion like, oh, no, we need a new drummer. Let's just get Ringo. Maybe we should try to get Bill back, you know, things like that. Or...
Now, I will say this, and we've talked about the bass part of the Stones for a long time, but I will say that I didn't, the interplay between him and Daryl, I don't think, it's new yet. The interplay between Charlie and Bill, I don't know we can come up with any combination. Mm-hmm. Charlie and anybody, Bill and anybody, two other imitators, that's going to match. I mean, if you go listen to the good system, like Ladies and Gentlemen, or what's the Texas one, the 78 one, we watched it. Some Girls Live in Texas, or even probably Wembley or the Tattoo You ones, like the bass and drums in those is just incredible. And I didn't really catch a lot of that. I mean, he had a bass solo and there was bass going on, but it wasn't the same yet. And again, that's my take on it. There are probably a lot of people who didn't think twice about that or whatever. It didn't drag anything down.
That's harder than it sounds in that sentence when you're on this level. Yeah. I mean, that's... 99.9% of it, really. I was, you know, I was like, well, what's David Hood doing?
Right.
Let's bring a soul bassist in and see. Yeah. But no, I'm glad to hear. The clips that I've seen from Jadrian, it looked amazing. Oh, yeah, that's something to talk about. So, like, what was the stage setup like? Was it inflatables? Did they have giant blow-up honky-tonk women?
No inflatables this
time.
Did
it seem sparse or right on?
The first show I ever saw was Steel Wheels, which I think remains, like, the largest... stage set. Maybe a bigger bang might have been in a way a little bit bigger, but so to me everything always looks smaller compared to that. And I saw that for it was the first show of theirs I saw, so I'm 15-year-old, you know, fanatic. So in my head I'm probably not only was it legitimately the biggest stage set of all time, but in my head I've probably created this narrative where it was like seven times as big as
the size of Disney World
as it really was. And that was in the Silver Dome, which I think was a bigger place than Ford Field. So it kind of had to be.
Yeah. Like almost twice the size.
they really made that something to, I think that was their first sort of interactive stage that they had done. And they did a few others past that, but this wasn't that. It's really big. The monitors are gigantic. There was, I think, four of them.
Now, that has come a long way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if, I seem to remember the Stones were the first group who needed that. Because they were playing such large venues and like, oh, okay, if you're in the nosebleed, you can hardly see them. So they put up these huge things so you have a good view no matter where you are. But I mean, now these screens, they're high def. You can add effects in. I mean, it was great looking.
Oh, yeah. The visuals were really good. The effects that they put through the screens was really good. They didn't have some of the things they had in previous tours where there was the B stage.
Oh, right.
So there was no B stage. There was a catwalk that went right through the center of the crowd, maybe midway into the floor seats. And Mick went down that a couple times. Oh, it's a couple, many times, actually. Ronnie went down it a few times.
Nice.
Ronnie was all over the place.
But still.
Keith was moving slowly. Mm-hmm. He did get out and about. He was down the catwalk a couple times himself. Ronnie was all over the place. He really moved a lot. And Mick, of course, is amazing. Not lost a step for 78. Frantic all over the place. Yeah, so the stage was really impressive. The effects were really good. Like to the sides of both sides of the stage and behind is all empty because they use that for fireworks and things toward the end. I feel like back in the day they would have sold you seats back there. Like somebody probably who worked for the stadium would have sold you some seats like in the parking lot, and then you find out you're behind the stage or something. But no, they at least you didn't, you know, get those seats.
Maybe that was a fire safety thing, and that's the only reason.
They've done in past things what's called the lucky dip. Buy some tickets, and you're not quite sure exactly. There's probably people who will write in and tell us what this is, but there's like a pit area close to the catwalk, and you're not quite sure where your seat's going to be, but you're like, well, it's going to be good. We don't really know. So we didn't have those, but we were very close to that. We're still on the floor, and it's a different experience. I think every time I've seen them now, I've moved closer to the...
Oh, mm-hmm.
Steel Wheels, I went with, I remember we were floor, but pretty far back. And it bummed me out because there were two nights, and I picked that night. It turns out the next night, the available seats would have been on the sides where they like came up to the rafters.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Okay. I think the next time I went, you and I went in Spartan Stadium, we were pretty far back. When you talk about like the nosebleeds, I think that same era, there was the Silverdome show, same thing. Like what kind of good seat are you going to get unless you're sitting front row in the Silverdome? I did go see them at the Palace of Auburn Hills, which is a smaller setup. And I think that before this time, the best seats I had were when we went to the to Ford Field. We were in the like lower bowl or something, which was... I'm going to have to go look up that set list now.
Right. So the number one thing, would you recommend everyone go see the show?
Oh, definitely.
If it's coming to your town, if you can do it.
Definitely. I mean, at this point, I don't know how many titans like this are left. I mean, Chuck Berry played until he was in his 90s. It's a different show. I mean, he had to play at the State Fair or something. You know, it's a very different thing. Jerry Lee's still alive, but I don't know if he's playing at this point or where he would be playing at this type of thing. Everyone else is either not to that tier or either doesn't tour or is retiring. I think there's a couple people left who are going out who would put on a similar show. Not to this level, but I'm trying to think of people who would even put on something like this. Kiss, maybe? And they're getting ready to hand it...
Kiss played Pine Knob, or DTE, as you would call it.
And I think they're getting ready to like hand it over to like clones now or whatever.
So they hit up like a venue about a tenth the size.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they couldn't put on a show. It's just they're not as...
No,
great right
yeah,
now.
I'm just thinking like in terms of showmanship, that type of show.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people, but to your point, they'd be in a smaller place. For a spectacle of this size and this kind of show, I don't know anyone else who would really do it and still do it at this level. Okay, there's people who say Elton John, who's terrific, but it's a different... There's spectacle, but it's a different show. I mean, he's at a piano and it moves and stuff, but it's not that... It's not a rock and roll band, the greatest rock and roll band in the world, who could play a club playing this giant stadium. There's no mix of that. There's very few people who could do it, and like people who aren't doing it at this point. It's a very roundabout way of saying yes, definitely. And you know, the other thing, there was sort of like this old friend vibe.
Mm.
Some people are probably not like this about the Stones. Like it used to be considered a very dangerous, controversial band. And there was always, I think, this is missing in a lot of rock and roll since the 80s maybe, but a rock show used to be this kind of thing that was a little, you never quite knew what was going to go on.
Seedy, in a wonderful way.
Right. So like you didn't go, I mean, I didn't see these things, but if you talk to people who were there and colors their judgment with time, you didn't know what Jim Morrison was going to do on a given night, right? You didn't know what Led Zeppelin, what kind of show you were going to get. You didn't know what Keith Moon was going to do. You didn't know if the Stones were going to be late because they got into some sort of thing. You didn't know what kind of songs they were going to break out. Maybe Guns N' Roses had that at one point. Now, you know, I don't know that they do, but there's this other sort of vibe of like seeing these old friends, like mm-hmm. that you haven't seen in a while. And it's in a time when, this sounds a little hokey, but a time when everybody fights about everything, there didn't seem to be any of that. You know what I mean? Like everybody was digging that you get to see this group and they're playing these songs, and not even from a nostalgia kick. I can't speak for everybody, but just like a communal experience.
Wow.
It's like when people used to enjoy going to the movies together.
Mm-hmm.
That was my take on it. It's the cliche of like, well, you don't know. It could be, we don't know if we'll see him again. It's like, well, probably.
We've been hearing that since 1973, at least.
Yeah, I mean, and us particularly since the 80s, probably, so.
Well, I like it because to me, it's a, you know, definitely a win for the Stones, which is a win in a way for us all.
They've been talking about doing more shows next year if they're feeling kind of up to it. I don't know. There's still rumors of this long-promised next album.
The mystery studio album.
I still think they should have just taken the outtakes from the Tattoo You stuff, which itself was outtakes, and made an album out of that.
We'll have to talk about that in a minute. it's they've been so generous in the last year and a half with stuff I never thought I'd get a chance to hear, just legendary rumored stuff, and it's here. And then they put out so many great new things.
I liked everything on that. All those outtakes were great. Looking at the set list that I pulled up here, you know, You Got Me Rockin' is one of my favorite songs. I think it was the only song from the 90s they did. Looking at this list, that is true. Probably my favorite song off of Voodoo Lounge. I was very happy they broke that out. This is one that has become a concert staple for them. And it's funny because Keith has said in things like, Mick didn't really seem like he wanted to do it at first. And now he loves doing it. It took on a life of its own. There's a history behind the song. Maybe when we do the Voodoo Lounge season, we'll talk about it. But it started as sort of this piano-based barrel house type thing, and it morphs into this just straight-up rock song. I always thought that that was going to be a bigger hit off Voodoo Lounge, and I think whoever was doing their promotion and marketing at the time dropped the ball on that. I think that would have gone further. 19th Nervous Breakdown is a song I'd never seen them do live. I don't think they did it live for a lot of years. They had tried it. I've seen this online. They tried this slowed down version of it maybe in 97 and maybe once or twice, and it didn't quite gel. But Mick had done a great version on Saturday Night Live with, I think, the Foo Fighters or Arcade Fire. I don't remember which band. And this was similar to that. It had all that energy of the recorded version. And Daryl really got the Bill Wyman, the bass runs at the end, mm-hmm. Which is a big part of the song. He got that great. Wild Horses, we talked a little bit. It was the song Vote, which, you know, I can't say that I was disappointed because you're like, well, they didn't do the one I picked, but instead they did like one of the greatest
songs of all time.
So, I mean, if you're not getting that, you know, you can't always get what you want really went over well. I think that was the first song of the night that, I mean, everybody was into everything, but everybody was singing along with that one.
I was going to, in Jadrian's clips, the whole crowd was singing.
Loved like, it. It's always a sing-along, and they did a little bit of an extended thing towards the end, which they did. This is one that, for me, live, there's so many great versions. Some of the versions, I thought, in the 70s, where they start getting into these long, like, sax solos and Billy Preston stuff, I don't like as much because it starts to lose the punch of it, but Honky Tonk Women was the song that, right before Keith's two songs. I don't remember exactly when this happened, but Mick at some point did make some jokes about Detroit and try to throw in some local Detroit commentary. Talked about going to, for any Detroit listeners, and I don't know if there are any, he talked about going either to Lafayette, Coney Island, or National and couldn't decide. So he went to both, and then he said he had a Boston cooler and a Pepto-Bismo and went to bed. Made a motion that he got a stomach ache from going there.
He didn't go to American Coney?
Well, it's the one, this is two, right? Yeah.
I'm a, you know, Joel Mitchell will disagree because American Coney has this like beef heart in their chili. Mm. I prefer Lafayette.
I don't remember the last time I went to either of them, but, you know, to me, I'm like, well, any Coney's going to do it for me. After Keith's songs, from what I've seen, the next five songs are pretty standard now in the set list and how they go. So the first maybe six songs tend to rotate a little bit. This is where you get the crowd vote. You get some, maybe something specific to that town. There's a little bit of more variety. Keith songs have a little bit more variety. And then this batch is, I mean, this run is incredible. So you have Miss You, then Midnight Rambler, which was just a terrific, really wild version, really loose, really loud. This is one that was so loud, mixed harmonica playing. You know, I'm trying to move around and bounce up and down a little bit to get into the song. But when I did that, like the volume of it and just everything was making me dizzy because the, you know, harmonica at that level is deafening. From there, they do Paint It Black, Sympathy for the Devil, and Jumpin' Jack Flash. Just when you can't take another hit.
Let us unleash this epic upon you.
They go after that, you know, to the... This part's always funny to me because, you know, when bands do a staged encore, there was a comedian years ago who was like making fun of that. Like, you know, the band comes back, you wouldn't let us leave. Like, no, you wouldn't turn on the lights. You wouldn't let us leave. Gimme Shelter was the first part of the encore, a slow version, sort of a slow start to it. I don't know if we talked about her, but their backup singer, I think is, I hope I don't get this wrong. Sasha Allen, I think is her name. And she took over for Lisa Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
And she was dynamite. She was just terrific the entire show. She brought a lot of energy to it. She does the solo, the Mary Clayton. Went down the catwalk and sort of spotlight and did that. And then
nice.
Did a duet toward the end of the song with Mick on that and got a big reaction. So she's hopefully sticks around because she's a great addition to the crew. And then Satisfaction is the last song, which kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you look back on concert lists and things, they've... Jumpin' Jack Flash, I think, has sometimes been the encore. Maybe You Can't Always Get What You Want has been. At this stage, you think like, well, if you're the Stones and you're putting on this show and you're thinking, well, this is a crowd who, I think Mick has said sometimes, you know, every time you do these things, somebody's seeing you for the first time. So you want to present this kind of show to them. But this could also be the last time, pun intended. What better song to go out on, except maybe the last time?
Right, that would have been good.
I mean, that was too tongue-in-cheek. I don't think that's been in their list since maybe the No Security tour of the late 90s. So I don't know if that's just something like, no, that's too referential. We can't put that one in. I wish that would come back. What a song, you know, to go on. And then it ends with fireworks and things. And
but I heard like a lot of fireworks, an epic.
A lot. Fireworks. Maybe not as much as like Steel Wheels, but quite a bit. Then the whole band, everybody on stage does a bow. Then it's down to Mick, Ronnie, and Keith who do a bow. And then they kind of split. They were still sort of out there, but I think Mick kind of did the last bow in a way. So, yeah, an amazing show.
Hooray!
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Hard Labor and Money Splashes, the podcast dedicated to the world's greatest rock and roll band, the Rolling Stones. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Email us at hardlabormoneysplashes@gmail.com.